by to protect you. It's up to you to stop these thieves in their tracks.
The four thieves of productivity.
The first thief is the inability to say no. Second is the fear of chaos. The third is poor health habits. And the fourth thief is an environment that doesn't support your goals.
Thief 1. The inability to say no.
Someone once told me that one yes must be defended over time by 1,000 no's. Early in my career, I didn't understand this at all. But today, I think it's an understatement. It's one thing to be distracted when you're trying to focus. It's another entirely to be hijacked before you even get to. The way to protect what you've said yes to and stay productive is to say no to anyone or anything that could derail you. Peers will ask for your advice and help. Coworkers will want you on their team. Friends will request your assistance. Strangers will seek you out. Invitations and interruptions will come at you from everywhere imaginable. How you handle all of this determines the time you're able to devote to your one thing and the results you're ultimately able to produce. Here's the thing. When you say yes to something, it's imperative that you understand what you're saying no to. Screenwriter Sidney Howard of Gone with the Wind fame advised, "One half of knowing what you want is knowing what you must give up before you get it. In the end, the best way to succeed big is to go small. And when you go small, you say no. A lot. A lot more than you might have ever considered before." No one knew how to go small better than Steve Jobs. He was famously as proud of the products he didn't pursue as he was of the transformative products Apple created. In the 2 years after his return in 1997, he took the company from 350 products to 10. That's 340 no's, not counting anything else proposed during that period. At the 1997 Macworld Developers Conference, Jobs explained, "When you think about focusing, you think, well, focusing is saying yes. No. Focusing is about saying no." Jobs was after extraordinary results, and he knew there was only one way to get there. Jobs was a no man. The art of saying yes is, by default, the art of saying no. Saying yes to everyone is the same as saying yes to nothing. Each additional obligation chips away at your effectiveness at everything you try. So the more things you do, the less successful you are at any one of them. You can't please everyone, so don't try. In fact, when you try, the one person you absolutely won't please is yourself. Remember, saying yes to your one thing is your top priority. As long as you can keep this in perspective, saying no to anything that keeps you from keeping your time block should become something you can accept. Then it's just a matter of how. All of us struggle to some degree with saying no. There are many reasons. We want to be helpful. We don't want to be hurtful. We want to be caring and considerate. We don't want to seem callous and cold. All of this is totally understandable. Being needed is incredibly satisfying, and helping others can be deeply fulfilling. Focusing on our own goals to the exclusion of others, especially the causes and the people we value the most, can feel downright selfish and self-centered, but it doesn't have to. Master marketer Seth Godin says, "You can say no with respect, you can say no promptly, and you can say no with a lead to someone who might say yes. But just saying yes because you can't bear the short-term pain of saying no is not going to help you do the work." Godin gets it. You can keep your yes and say no in a way that works for you and for others. Of course, whenever you need to say no, you can just say it and be done with it. There is nothing wrong with this at all. In fact, this should be your first choice every time. But if you feel there are times you need to say no in a helpful way, there are many ways to say it that can still lead people forward toward their goals. You can ask them a question that leads them to find the help they need elsewhere. You might suggest another approach that doesn't require any help at all. You might not know what else they could do, so you could help them by gently prompting them to get creative. You can politely redirect their request to others who might be better able to assist them. Now, if you do end up saying yes, there are a variety of creative ways you can deliver it. In other words, you can leverage your yeses. Help desks, support centers, and information resources couldn't exist without this kind of strategic thinking. Pre-printed scripts, frequently asked question pages or files, written explanations, recorded instructions, posted information, checklists, catalogs, directories, and pre-scheduled training classes can all be used to effectively say yes while still preserving your time block. I started doing this in my first job as a sales manager. I leveraged training sessions to cut frequently asked questions off at the pass, and then by either printing or recording them, I created a library of answers my team could access whenever I wasn't personally available. The biggest lesson I've learned is that it helps to have a philosophy and an approach to managing my space. Over time, I developed what I refer to as the 3-foot rule. When I hold one of my arms out as wide as possible from my neck to my fingertips is 3 feet. I've made it my time managing mission to limit who and what can get within 3 feet of me. The rule is simple. A request must be connected to my one thing for me to consider it. If it's not, then I either say no to it or use any of the approaches I shared above to deflect it elsewhere. Learning to say no isn't a recipe for being a recluse. It's just the opposite. It's a way to gain the greatest freedom and flexibility possible. Your talent and abilities are limited resources. Your time is finite. If you don't make your life about what you say yes to, then it will almost certainly become what you intended to say no to. In a 1977 article in Ebony magazine, the incredibly successful comedian Bill Cosby summed up this productivity thief perfectly. As he was building his career, Cosby read some advice that he took to heart. It said, "I don't know the key to success, but the key to failure is trying to please everybody. This is advice worth living by. If you can't say no a lot, you'll never truly be able to say yes to achieving your one thing. Literally, it's one or the other, and you get to decide." When you give your one thing your most emphatic yes and vigorously say no to the rest, extraordinary results become possible.
Thief 2, Fear of Chaos.
A not-so-funny thing happens along the way to extraordinary results. Untidiness, unrest, disarray, disorder. When we tirelessly work our time block, clutter automatically takes up residence around us. Messes are inevitable when you focus on just one thing. While you whittle away on your most important work, the world doesn't sit and wait. It stays on fast forward, and things just rack up and stack up while you bear down on a singular priority. Unfortunately, there's no pause or stop button. You can't run life in slow motion. Wishing you could will just make you miserable and disappointed. One of the greatest thieves of productivity is the unwillingness to allow for chaos or the lack of creativity in dealing with it. Focusing on the one thing has a guaranteed consequence. Other things don't get done. Although that's exactly the point, it doesn't automatically make us feel any better about it. There will always be people and projects that simply aren't a part of your biggest single priority, but still matter. You will feel them pressing for your attention. There will always be unfinished work and loose ends lying around to snare your focus. Your time block can feel like a submersible, where the deeper you commit to your one thing, the more the pressure mounts for you to come up for air and address everything you've put on hold. Eventually, it can feel like even the tiniest leak might trigger an all-out implosion. When this happens, when you give in to the pressure of any chaos being left unattended, it can be a total relief, but not when it comes to productivity. It's a thief. The truth is, it's a package deal. When you strive for greatness, chaos is guaranteed to show up. In fact, other areas of your life may experience chaos in direct proportion to the time you put in on your one thing. It's important for you to accept this instead of fighting it. Oscar-winning filmmaker Francis Ford Coppola warns us that anything you build on a large scale or with intense passion invites chaos. In other words, get used to it and get over it.
Albert Einstein said, "If a cluttered desk is a sign of a cluttered mind, of what then is an empty desk a sign?"
Now, in anybody's life or work, there are some things that just can't be ignored, like family, friends, pets, personal commitments, or critical job projects. At any given time, you may have some or all of these tugging at your time block. You can't forego your power hours. That's a given. So what do you do? I get asked this a lot. I'll be teaching and know that as soon as I finish, hands are going to shoot up with people asking, "What do I do if I'm a single parent with kids? What if I have elderly parents who constantly depend on me? I have absolute obligations I must take care of, so what do I do?" These are obviously fair questions, and here's what I tell them. Depending on your situation, your time block might initially look different from others. Each of our situations is unique. Depending on where you are in your life, you may not be able to immediately block off every morning to be by yourself. You may have a kid or a parent in tow. You may be doing your time block at a daycare, nursing home, or some other place you have to be. Your alone time may have to be at a different time of day for a while. You may have to trade off time with others so they protect your time block, and you in turn protect theirs. You may even have your kid or parents help you during your time block because they simply must be with you or you actually need the support. If you have to beg, then beg. If you have to barter, then barter. If you have to be creative, then be creative. Just don't be a victim of your circumstances. Don't sacrifice your time block on the altar of, "I just can't make it work." My mom used to say, when you argue for your limitations, you get to keep them. But this is one you can't afford. Figure it out. Find a way. Make it happen.
William James said, "The art of being wise is the art of knowing what to overlook."
When you commit to your one thing each day, extraordinary results ultimately occur. In time, this creates the income or opportunity to manage the chaos. So don't let this thief pickpocket your productivity. Move past your fear of chaos, learn to deal with it, and trust that your work on your one thing will come through for you.
Thief 3. Poor health habits.
I was once asked, "If you don't take care of your body, where will you live?" It was a real question. I had been fighting the painful side effects of interstitial cystitis and was dealing with continually shaking legs, a debilitating side effect of cholesterol-fighting statins. My ability to function, much less focus, was extremely compromised, and the challenge to overcome this was daunting. My doctor gave me some options and asked me what I wanted to do. The answer was to change my health habits. It was then that I discovered one of the greatest lessons of extraordinary results. Personal energy mismanagement is a silent thief of productivity. When we keep borrowing against our future by poorly protecting our energy, there is a predictable outcome of either slowly running out of gas or prematurely crashing and burning. You see it all the time. When people don't understand the power of the one thing, they try to do too much. And because this never works, over time they end up making a horrific deal with themselves. They go for success by sacrificing their health. They stay up late, miss meals, or eat poorly, and completely ignore exercise. Personal energy becomes an afterthought. Allowing health and home life to suffer becomes acceptable by default. Driven to hit goals, they think of cheating themselves as a good bet, but this gamble can't pay off. Not only does this approach consistently short-circuit your best work, it's dangerous to assume that health and hearth will be just waiting for you to come back and enjoy any time in the future. High achievement and extraordinary results require big energy. The trick is learning how to get it and keep it. So what can you do? Think of yourself as the amazing biological machine you are. and consider this daily energy plan for high productivity. Begin early with meditation and prayer for spiritual energy. Starting the day by connecting with your higher purpose aligns your thoughts and actions with a larger story. Then move straight to the kitchen for your most important meal of the day and the cornerstone of physical energy, a nutritious breakfast designed to fuel your day's work. You can't run long on empty calories, and you can't run at all on an empty tank. Figure out easy ways to eat right, and then plan all your daily meals a week at a time. Fueled up, head to your exercise spot to relieve stress and strengthen your body. Conditioning gives you maximum capacity, which is critical for maximum productivity. If you have limited time to exercise, the simple thing to do is to wear a pedometer. Toward the end of the day, if you haven't walked at least 10,000 steps, make it your one exercise thing to reach your 10,000 step goal before you go to bed. This one habit will change your life. Now, if you haven't spent time with your loved ones at breakfast or during your workout, go find them. Hug, talk, and laugh. You'll be reminded why you're working in the first place and motivated to be as productive as possible so you can get home earlier. Productive people thrive on emotional energy. It fills their heart with joy and makes them light on their feet. Next, grab your calendar and plan your day. Make sure you know what matters most and make sure those things are going to get done. Look at what you have to do, estimate the time it will take to do it, and plan your time accordingly. Knowing what you must do and making the time to do it is how you bring the most amazing mental energy to your life. Calendaring your day this way frees up your mind from worrying about what might not get done while inspiring you with what will. It's only when you make time for extraordinary results that they get a chance to show up. When you get to work, go to work on your one thing. If you're like me and have some morning priorities you must get done first, then give yourself an hour at most to do them. Don't loiter and don't slow down. Clear the decks and then get down to the business of doing what matters most. Around noon, take a break, have lunch, and turn your attention to everything else you can do before you head out for the rest of the day. Last, in the evening, when it's time for bed, get 8 hours of sleep. Powerful engines need cooling down and resting before taking off again, and you're no different. You need your sleep so your mind and body can rest and recharge for tomorrow's extraordinary productivity. Anyone you know who gets little sleep and appears to be doing great is either a freak of nature or hiding its effects from you. Either way, they aren't your role model. Protect your sleep by determining when you must go to bed each night and don't allow yourself to be lured away from it. If you're committed to your wake-up time, you can stay up late only so many nights before you're forced to hit the hay at a decent hour. If your response is that you have too much to do, stop right now, go back to the beginning of this book, and start over. You apparently missed something. When you've connected proper sleep with success, you'll have a good enough reason to get up, and you'll go to sleep at the right time.
The Highly Productive Person's Daily Energy Plan.
First, meditate and pray for spiritual energy. Next, eat right, exercise, and sleep sufficiently for physical energy. Third, hug, kiss, and laugh with loved ones for emotional energy. Fourth, set goals, plan, and calendar for mental energy. And last, time block your one thing for business energy. Here's the productivity secret of this plan. When you spend the early hours energizing yourself, you get pulled through the rest of the day with little additional effort. You're not focused on having a perfect day all day, but on having an energized start to each day. If you can have a highly productive day until noon, the rest of the day falls easily into place. That's positive energy creating positive momentum. Structuring the early hours of each day is the simplest way to extraordinary results.
Thief 4. Your environment doesn't support your goals.
Early in my career, a married mom of two teenagers sat in front of me and cried. Her family had told her they would support her new career as long as nothing at home changed. meals, carpooling, anything that touched their world couldn't be disrupted. She had agreed, only to discover later how bad a deal she'd cut. As I listened, I suddenly realized I was hearing about a productivity thief almost everyone overlooks. Your environment must support your goals. Your environment is simply who you see and what you experience every day. The people are familiar, the places comfortable. You trust these elements of your environment and quite possibly even take them for granted. But be aware, anyone and anything at any time can become a thief, diverting your attention away from your most important work and stealing your productivity right from under your nose. For you to achieve extraordinary results, the people surrounding you and your physical surroundings must support your goals. No one lives or works in isolation. Every day, throughout your day, you come in contact with others and are influenced by them. Unquestionably, these individuals impact your attitude, your health, and ultimately, your performance. The people around you may be more important than you think. It's a fact that you're likely to pick up some of the attitudes of others by working with them, socializing with them, or simply being around them. From coworkers to friends to family, if they're generally not positive or fulfilled on the job or away from it, they'll probably pass on some of their negativity. Attitude is contagious and it easily spreads. As strong as you think you are, no one is strong enough to avoid the influence of negativity forever. So surrounding yourself with the right people is the right thing to do. While attitude thieves will rob you of energy, effort, and resolve, supportive people will do what they can to encourage or assist you. Ultimately, being with success-minded people creates what researchers call a positive spiral of success, where they lift you up and send you on your way. Who you hang out with also has serious implications for your health habits. Harvard professor Dr. Nicholas A. Christakis and University of California San Diego associate professor James H. Fowler wrote the book on how our social networks unmistakably impact our well-being. Their book, Connected, The Surprising Power of Our Social Networks and How They Shape Our Lives, connects the dots between our relationships and drug use, sleeplessness, smoking, drinking, eating, and even happiness. For instance, their 2007 study on obesity revealed that if one of your close friends becomes obese, you're 57% more likely to do the same. Why? The people we see tend to set our standard for what's appropriate. In time, you begin to think, act, and even look a little like those you hang out with. But not only do their attitudes and health habits influence you, their relative success does too. If the people you spend your time with are high achievers, their achievements can influence your own. A study featured in the psychology journal, Social Development, shows that out of nearly 500 school-age participants with reciprocal best-friend relationships, children who establish and maintain relationships with high-achieving students experience gains in their report card grades. Further, those who have high-achieving friends appear to benefit with regard to their motivational beliefs and academic performance. Hanging out with people who seek success will strengthen your motivation and positively push your performance. Your mother was right when she cautioned you to be careful of the company you keep. The wrong people in your environment can most certainly dissuade, deter, and distract you from the productivity course you've set out on. But the opposite is also true. No one succeeds alone, and no one fails alone. Pay attention to the people around you. Seek out those who will support your goals and show the door to anyone who won't. The individuals in your life will influence you and impact you probably more than you give them credit for. Give them their due and make sure that the sway they have on you sends you in the direction you want to go.
Oprah Winfrey said, "Surround yourself only with people who are going to lift you higher."
If people are the first priority in creating a supportive environment, place isn't far behind. When your physical environment isn't in step with your goals, it can also keep you from ever getting started on them in the first place. I know this sounds oversimplified, but to succeed at doing your one thing, you have to be able to get to it, and your physical environment plays a vital role in whether you do or not. The wrong surroundings may never let you get there. If your environment is so full of distractions and diversions that before you can help yourself, you've gotten caught doing something you shouldn't, you won't get where you need to go. Think of it as having to walk down an aisle of candy every day when you're trying to lose weight. Some may be able to handle this easily, but most of us are going to sample some sweets along the way. What is around you will either aim you toward your time block or pull you away. This starts from the time you wake up and continues until you get to your time block bunker. What you see and hear from the time your alarm rings to when your time block begins ultimately determines if you get there, when you get there, and whether you're ready to be productive when you do. So do a trial run. Walk through the path you'll take each day and eradicate all the sight and sound thieves that you find. For me at home, it's simple things like email, the morning paper, the morning TV news shows, the neighbors out walking their dogs. All wonderful things, but not wonderful when I have an appointment with myself to accomplish my one thing. So I check off email quickly. I never see the paper. I keep the TV cabinet closed, and I choose my driving route carefully. At work, I avoid the community coffee pot and the information boards. They can come later in the day. What I've learned is that when you clear the path to success, that's when you consistently get there. Don't let your environment lead you astray. Your physical surroundings matter, and the people around you matter. Having an environment that doesn't support your goals is all too common, and unfortunately an all too common thief of productivity. As actor and comedian Lily Tomlin once said, "The road to success is always under construction, so don't allow yourself to be detoured from getting to your one thing. Pave your way with the right people and place."
Big ideas. Start saying no. Always remember that when you say yes to something, you're saying no to everything else. It's the essence of keeping a commitment. Start turning down other requests outright or saying no for now to distractions so that nothing detracts you from getting to your top priority. Learning to say no can and will liberate you. It's how you'll find the time for your one thing. Accept chaos. Recognize that pursuing your one thing moves other things to the back burner. Loose ends can feel like snares, creating tangles in your path. This kind of chaos is unavoidable. Make peace with it. Learn to deal with it. The success you have accomplishing your one thing will continually prove you made the right decision. Manage your energy. Don't sacrifice your health by trying to take on too much. Your body is an amazing machine, but it doesn't come with a warranty, you can't trade it in, and repairs can be costly. It's important to manage your energy so you can do what you must do, achieve what you want to achieve, and live the life you want to live. Take ownership of your environment. Make sure that the people around you and your physical surroundings support your goals. The right people in your life and the right physical environment on your daily path will support your efforts to get to your one thing. When both are in alignment with your one thing, they will supply the optimism and physical lift you need to make your one thing happen.
Screenwriter Leo Rosten pulled everything together for us when he said, "I cannot believe that the purpose of life is to be happy. I think the purpose of life is to be useful, to be responsible, to be compassionate. It is above all to matter, to count, to stand for something, to have made some difference that you lived at all. Live with purpose, live by priority, and live for productivity. Follow these three for the same reason you make the three commitments, and avoid the four thieves. Because you want to leave your mark, you want your life to matter."
Chapter 18, The Journey. A Chinese proverb says, "To get through the hardest journey, we need take only one step at a time, but we must keep on stepping."
One step at a time may be trite, but it's still true. No matter the objective, no matter the destination, the journey to anything you want always starts with a single step. That step is called the one thing. I want you to do something. I want you to close your eyes and imagine your life as big as it can possibly be, as big as you have ever dared to dream, and then some. Can you see it? Now open your eyes and listen to me. Whatever you can see, you have the capacity to move toward. And when what you go for is as vast as you can possibly envision, you'll be living the biggest life you can possibly live. Living large is that simple. Let me share a way you can do this. Write down your current income. Then multiply it by a number. 2, 4, 10, 20, it doesn't matter. Just pick one, multiply your income by it, and write down the new number. Looking at it and ignoring whether you're frightened or excited, ask yourself, will my current actions get me to this number in the next 5 years? If they will, then keep doubling the number until they won't. If you then make your actions match your answer, you'll be living large. Now, I use personal earnings only as an example. This thinking can apply to your spiritual life, your physical conditioning, your personal relationships, your career achievement, your business success, or anything else that matters to you. When you lift the limits of your thinking, you expand the limits of your life. It's only when you can imagine a bigger life that you can ever hope to have one. The challenge is that living the largest life possible requires you not only to think big, but also take the necessary actions to get there. Extraordinary results require you to go small. Getting your focus as small as possible simplifies your thinking and crystallizes what you must do. No matter how big you can think, when you know where you're going and work backwards to what you need to do to get there, you'll always discover it begins with going small. Years ago, I wanted an apple tree on our property. Turns out you can't buy a fully mature one. The only option I had was to buy a small one and grow it. So I did. And 5 years later, we had apples. But because I thought as big as I could, guess what? I didn't just plant one. Today we have an orchard. Your life is like this. You don't get a fully mature one. You get a small one and the opportunity to grow it if you want to. Think small, and your life's likely to stay small. Think big, and your life has a chance to grow big. The choice is yours. When you choose a big life, by default, you'll have to go small to get there. You must survey your choices, narrow your options, line up your priorities, and do what matters most. You must go small. You must find your one thing. There's no surefire thing. But there's always something, one thing, that out of everything matters more than anything. I'm not saying there will only be one thing, or even the same thing, forever. I'm saying that at any moment in time there can only be one thing. And when that one thing is in line with your purpose and sits atop your priorities, it will be the most productive thing you can do to launch you toward the best you can be. Actions build on action. Habits build on habit. Success builds on success. The right domino knocks down another and another and another. So whenever you want extraordinary results, look for the levered action that will start a domino run for you. Big lives ride the powerful wave of chain reactions and are built sequentially, which means when you're aiming for success, you can't just skip to the end. Extraordinary doesn't work like that. The knowledge and momentum that build as you live the one thing each day, each week, each month, and each year are what give you the ability to build an extraordinary life. But this doesn't just happen. You have to make it happen.
T.S. Eliot said, "Only those who will risk going too far can possibly find out how far one can go."
One evening, an elder Cherokee told his grandson about a battle that goes on inside all people. He said, "My son, the battle is between two wolves inside us. One is fear. It carries anxiety, concern, uncertainty, hesitancy, indecision, and inaction. The other is faith. It brings calm, conviction, confidence, enthusiasm, decisiveness, excitement, and action. The grandson thought about it for a moment and then meekly asked his grandfather, "Which wolf wins?" The old Cherokee replied, "The one you feed." Your journey toward extraordinary results will be built above all else on faith. It's only when you have faith in your purpose and priorities that you'll seek out your one thing. And once certain you know it, you'll have the personal power necessary to push you through any hesitancy to do it. Faith ultimately leads to action. And when we take action, we avoid the very thing that could undermine or undo everything we've worked for. And that's regret.
Advice from a friend.
As satisfying as succeeding is, as fulfilling as journeying feels, there is actually an even better reason to get up every day and take action on your one thing. On your way to living a life worth living, doing your best to succeed at what matters most to you not only rewards you with success and happiness, but with something even more precious. No regrets.
Mark Twain said, 20 years from now, you will be more disappointed by the things that you didn't do than by the ones you did do. So throw off the bow lines, sail away from the safe harbor, catch the trade winds in your sails, explore, dream, discover.
If you could go back in time and talk to the 18-year young you, or leap forward and visit the 80-year-old you, who would you want to take advice from? It's an interesting proposition. For me, it would be my older self. The view from the stern comes with the wisdom gathered from a longer and wider lens. So what would an older, wiser you say? Go live your life. Live it fully, without fear. Live with purpose. Give it your all and never give up. Effort is important, for without it you will never succeed at your highest level. Achievement is important, for without it you will never experience your true potential. Pursuing purpose is important, for unless you do, you may never find lasting happiness. Step out on faith that these things are true. Go live a life worth living, where, in the end, you'll be able to say, "I'm glad I did," not, "I wish I had." Why do I think this? Because many years ago, I began trying to understand what a life worth living would look like. I decided to go out and discover what this might be. It was a trip worth taking. I visited with people older than me, wiser than me, more successful than me. I researched, I read, I sought advice. From every credible source imaginable, I looked for clues and signs. Ultimately, I stumbled on a simple point of view. A life worth living might be measured in many ways, but the one way that stands above all others is living a life of no regrets. Life is too short to pile up woulda, coulda, shouldas. What clinched this for me was when I asked myself who might be the people with the greatest clarity about life. I decided it was those who were nearing the end of theirs. If starting with the end in mind is a good idea, then there's no end further than the very end of life to look for clues about how to live. I wondered what people with nothing left to do but look back might tell me about how to move forward. Their collective voice was overwhelming, and the answer was clear. Live your life to minimize the regrets you might have at the end. What kind of regrets? For me, very few books cause tears, much less require a handkerchief. But Bronnie Ware's 2012 book, The Top 5 Regrets of the Dying, did both. Ware spent many years caring for those facing their own mortality. When she questioned the dying about any regrets they had or anything they would do differently, Bronnie found that common themes surfaced again and again. In descending order, the 5 most common were these. I wish that I'd let myself be happier. Too late, they realized happiness is a choice. I wish I'd stayed in touch with my friends. Too often, they failed to give them the time and effort they deserved. I wish I'd had the courage to express my feelings. Too frequently, shut mouths and shuttered feelings weighed too heavy to handle. I wish I hadn't worked so hard. Too much time spent making a living over building a life caused too much remorse. As tough as these were, one stood out above them all. The most common regret was this. I wish I'd had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. Half-filled dreams and unfulfilled hopes, this was the number one regret expressed by the dying. As Ware put it, most people had not honored even a half of their dreams and had to die knowing it was due to choices they had made or not made. Bronnie Ware's observations aren't hers alone. At the conclusion of their exhaustive research, Gilovich and Medvec in 1994 wrote, "When people look back on their lives, it is the things they have not done that generate the greatest regret. People's actions may be troublesome initially. It is their inactions that plague them most with long-term feelings of regret." Honoring our hopes and pursuing productive lives through faith in our purpose and priorities is the message from our elders. From the wisest position they'll ever have comes their clearest message: no regrets. So make sure every day you do what matters most. When you know what matters most, everything makes sense. When you don't know what matters most, anything makes sense. The best lives aren't led this way.
Success is an inside job.
So how do you live a life of no regrets? The same way your journey to extraordinary results begins: with purpose, priority, and productivity. With the knowledge that regret must be avoided and can be. With your one thing at the top of your mind and the top of your schedule. With a single first step we can all take. I believe the best way to share this is in a story. One evening, a young boy hopped up in his father's lap and whispered, "Dad, we don't spend enough time together." The father, who dearly loved his son, knew in his heart this was true and replied, "You're right, and I'm so sorry. But I promise I'll make it up to you. Since tomorrow is Saturday, why don't we spend the entire day together? Just you and me." It was a plan. And the boy went to bed that night with a smile on his face, envisioning the day, excited about the adventurous possibilities with his pops. The next morning, the father rose earlier than usual. He wanted to make sure he could still enjoy his ritual cup of coffee with the morning paper before his son awoke, wound up and ready to go. Lost in thought, reading the business section, he was caught by surprise when suddenly his son pulled the newspaper down and enthusiastically shouted, "Dad, I'm up! Let's play!" The father, although thrilled to see his son and eager to start the day together, found himself guiltily craving just a little more time to finish his morning routine. Quickly racking his brain, he hit upon a promising idea. He grabbed his son, gave him a huge hug, and announced that their first game would be to put a puzzle together. "And when that was done," he said, "we'll head outside to play for the rest of the day." Earlier in his reading, he had seen a full-page ad with a picture of the world. He quickly found it, tore it into little pieces, and spread them out on the table. He found some tape for his son and said, "I want to see how fast you can put this puzzle together." The boy enthusiastically dove right in, while his father, confident that he had now bought some extra time, buried himself back in his paper. Within minutes, the boy once again yanked down his father's newspaper and proudly announced, "Dad, I'm done!" The father was astonished, for what lay in front of him, whole, intact, and complete, was the picture of the world back together as it was in the ad, and not one piece out of place. In a voice mixed with parental pride and wonder, the father asked, "How on earth did you do that so fast?" The young boy beamed. "It was easy, Dad. I couldn't do it at first, and I started to give up. It was so hard. But then I dropped a piece on the floor, and because it's a glass-top table, when I looked up, I saw that there was a picture of a man on the other side. That gave me an idea. When I put the man together, the world just fell into place." I first heard this innocent narrative when I was a teenager, and I've never been able to shake it. It became a tale I continually retell in my head, and ultimately a central theme in my life. What struck me isn't the apparent issue with life balance the father had, though I certainly got that. What grabbed me and stuck with me was the inspired solution of the son. He cracked a deeper code. A simple and more straightforward approach to life. a starting point for any challenge we face personally and professionally. The one thing we must all understand if we are to achieve extraordinary results at our highest level possible, undoubtedly, unquestionably, success is an inside job. Put yourself together and your world falls into place. When you bring purpose to your life, know your priorities, and achieve high productivity on the priority that matters most every day, your life makes sense and the extraordinary becomes possible. All success in life starts within you. You know what to do. You know how to do it. Your next step is simple. You are the first domino.
Putting the one thing to work. William Shakespeare said, "In delay there lies no plenty."
So, what now? You've heard the book. You get it. You're ready to experience extraordinary results in your life. So what do you do? How do you tap into the one thing in the most powerful way? Let's revisit the heart of the book and look at ways you can put the one thing to work right now. For brevity's sake, I'll shorten the focusing question. So be sure to add, such that by doing it, everything else will be easier or unnecessary at the end of each of these questions.
Your personal life.
Let the one thing bring clarity to the key areas of your life. Here's a short sampling. What's the one thing I can do this week to discover or affirm my life's purpose? What's the one thing I can do in 90 days to get in the physical shape I want? What's the one thing I can do today to strengthen my spiritual faith? What's the one thing I can do to find time to practice the guitar 20 minutes a day? Or to knock 5 strokes off my golf game in 90 days? Or to learn to paint in 6 months?
Your family.
Use the one thing with family for fun and rewarding experiences. Here are some options. What's the one thing we can do this week to improve our marriage? What's the one thing we can do every week to spend more quality family time together? What's the one thing we can do tonight to support our kids' schoolwork? What's the one thing we can do to make our next vacation the best ever? Or our next Christmas the best ever? Or next Thanksgiving the best ever? Please know that these are simply examples. If they apply to you personally, then great. If not, then use them to prompt you to discover what areas you might explore that matter to you. And don't forget time blocking. Time block with yourself to make sure the things that matter get done, and the activities that matter get mastered. In some cases, you'll want to block time to find your answer, and other times, you'll just need to block time to implement it. Now let's go to work and see how you might take the power of the one thing with you.
Your job.
Put the one thing to work, taking your professional life to the next level. Here's a few ways to get started. What's the one thing I can do today to complete my current project ahead of schedule? What's the one thing I can do this month to produce better work? What's the one thing I can do before my next review to get the raise I want? What's the one thing I can do every day to finish my work and still get home on time?
Your work team.
Pull the one thing into your work with others. Whether you're a manager, executive, or even a business owner, bring one thing thinking into your everyday work situations to drive productivity upward. Here are some scenarios to consider. In any meeting, ask, what's the one thing we can accomplish in this meeting and end early? In building your team, ask, what's the one thing I can do in the next 6 months to find and develop incredible talent? In planning for the next month, year, or 5 years, ask, what's the one thing we can do right now to accomplish our goals ahead of schedule and under budget? In your department or at the highest company level, ask, what's the one thing we can do in the next 90 days to create a one-thing culture? Again, these are merely examples to get you thinking about the possibilities. And, just as in your personal life, once you've decided what matters most, Professional time blocking becomes your way of making sure it gets done. At work, this is usually about either a short-term project you must complete or an ongoing long-term activity you're committed to doing repeatedly. No matter, an appointment with yourself is the surest path to ensuring you achieve extraordinary results. Casual, open discussions or short in-house workshops around key concepts in the book might really help everyone at work find their own understanding and get on the same page. If implementing the one thing in an area requires you to involve others, consider getting them their own copy of the book. Sharing your ahas is a great start, and you may be happily surprised with the insights you get back when others have a chance to read or listen to the book on their own. Keep in mind that it takes more than reading or listening to the book and a few conversations or mentions in a meeting to make the one thing a new habit in your life or in the lives of those around you. You know from the book that it takes an average of 66 days to create a new habit, so approach this accordingly. To ignite your life, you must focus on one thing long enough for it to catch fire. Let's look at a few other areas where the one thing might make a real difference.
Your nonprofit.
What's the one thing we can do to fund our annual financial needs? Or serve twice as many people? Or double our number of volunteers?
Your school.
What's the one thing we can do to decrease our dropout rate to zero? Or raise our test scores by 20%? Or increase our graduation rate to 100%? Or double our parent participation?
Your place of worship.
What's the one thing we can do to improve our worship experience? Double our mission outreach success? Max out our attendance, or achieve our finance goals.
Your community.
What's the one thing we can do to improve our sense of community? Help the homebound, double our volunteerism, or double voter turnout. After my wife Mary read this book, I asked her to do something. She turned to me and said, "Gary, that's not my one thing right now." We laughed, high-fived, and I got to do it myself. The one thing forces you to think big, work things through to create a list, prioritize that list so that a geometric progression can happen, and then hammer away on the first thing, the one thing, that starts your domino run. So be prepared to live a new life, and remember that the secret to extraordinary results is to ask a very big and specific question that leads you to one very small and tightly focused answer. If you try to do everything, you could wind up with nothing. If you try to do just one thing, the right one thing, you could wind up with everything you ever wanted. The one thing is real. If you put it to work, it will work. So don't delay. Ask yourself the question, what's the one thing I can do right now to start using the one thing in my life, such that by doing it, everything else will be easier or unnecessary? And make doing the answer your first one thing.
On the research.
Although I've lived the lessons of this book for some time, we began researching the one thing in earnest in 2008. Since then, we've archived a collection of well over 1,000 scholarly articles, scientific studies, and academic papers, hundreds of newspaper and magazine articles, and a large library of books written by the foremost experts in their fields. Binder after binder of discoveries, facts, and anecdotes literally covered every inch of our writing space. If you want to dive deeper into what you've learned from this book, you can find an extensive list of our references organized by topic and by chapter at theonething.com. The website is a gateway into our minds. We mention the authors who have inspired us, provide links to articles that are available online, and list the white papers that educated our thinking. We've also thrown in some additional interesting facts and even a fun video here and there. Enjoy the journey.
Thank you. Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.